Feeling a little run down by the Discourse and Rider fandom? Looking for something fresh to put that bounce in your step and a bee in your bonnet? Well, look no further than the Uncommon Cast RX. Active ingredients. GOMSQ.
Because everything I hate, I do say it should be better, and it would be nice if I don't just say...
Illustrator Clay.
Fire!
MC Pez. I am the child of the sun of my grandfather. Side effects may include ascites, show a fever, helper robotophobia, and an English jolt. This is the cure for the Kamen Rider Show. Dose as needed.
Okay, so, ladies and gentlemen, I guess I should welcome you to this episode of the Uncommon Cast RX, but I don't know which episode it'll be, and it should air... Help me out today, guys. Is this going to be the 28th?
Yeah.
But it's okay, Bobo bonus episode.
Maybe, yeah, I could see that being a bonus episode. We haven't really discussed it, to peel back the curtain for you listeners out there. We're doing something new, for sure, and I guess we're being rather oblique about it at this point. I don't know what the official title will be, but we're basically going through and catching some people's, mostly mine, because, you know, I'm the most important person in the world.
Mm-hmm.
My first impressions on certain shows... And how long ago, and just, it's Kiba. We're going to talk about the first six episodes, possibly in great detail. We're not going to try to spoil too much, but it is the first six episodes out of like a 48-episode show.
Yay.
So
and I think
knowing some detail shouldn't be that big of a deal. What do you think?
Maybe more importantly, the remit, you know, let's really tear the curtain down for this episode, is we want to talk about something that we like.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Let's just brief kayfabe. We're not enjoying Gaim as much as we were, and we're getting sick of being negative. So,
if you've been listening to the podcast for a while,
yeah,
you'll know that since basically early on in Double, I think I've been telling Matt you should watch Kiva. Kiva's really fun. Kiva's good, and we should talk about good things.
Every other episode.
And now finally.
Yeah. Every other episode, I'm like, oh, if only it was like Kabuto or Blade or Agito and. So let's just do it. Let's just talk about something we like.
Yeah, we started feeling like joy killers, and that's not what anybody wants, really.
Yeah, and I guess a little, announcement for the show. We're probably going to skip covering Gaim until, like, the 24th or 25th episode for Q2, because I made notes, and I know, Claire, you saw them on episode 19, and I feel like it's more of the same that we rehashed from 18
right,
and possibly 17 and even 16. So, while new things sort of happen in the show,
nothing
big happens. Like, they're all inconsequential things. That,
yeah.
Like,
not enough has changed in the plot to warrant a one-hour podcast.
No.
It doesn't matter. We're not going to talk about it now. We'll wait and just condense it all into an episode later on, because, unfortunately, it's just not doing a good job. But, you know what does a good job? Kiva.
Yeah.
I gotta say, I was always, not always, I've only been around this for a couple of years, but from when I first saw the imagery of Kiva, the suit and stuff, I thought it looked really cool. I mean, just a very basic, I guess my impression when I saw it was, I thought, wow, that is a really, really pretty suit. And then
yeah,
I think I later heard people talk about it, that there's a stained glass motif, and I think he has it in his suit, but definitely the monsters
mm-hmm
have it, the Fengar, and I really like that. But do you guys want to say some things about Kiva the first little bit, or should I go and...
I think we should all give, like, our first, very first, you know, when we just heard about it before we even watched it.
Yeah. Okay, well, like, I basically heard that it's, like, a vampire, like, a half-vampire, vampire slayer, Kamen Rider, and I was like, oh, really? Kamen, like, vampire Kamen Riders? That sounds pretty cool. I was a huge fan of Buffy and Angel, so, and, like, I don't like any of the modern vampire stuff, mostly just because of, I don't want to look at it, because it seems too dumb.
Kiva does seem obvious in retrospect, doesn't it, with the vampire boom? Like, there must be a vampire hunter rider, there must be.
Yeah,
behold.
Why not, right?
But, I mean, I think Claire probably had the biggest impression on you, but I don't remember. Obviously, I knew you at the time, and I don't remember your sort of, what drew you to it. Do you remember?
Well, when? Because we didn't watch it in 2008 when it aired.
No. Which is strange, because we just finished Cavity, thought we'd be right on
yeah
the next thing, and I think Deno...
I think it still didn't seem Like, it was still this exotic thing that you could just pick up. It wasn't, like, a weekly thing. We didn't think of it as actual regular television.
Hmm.
So we weren't really on the ball. But I watched the first episode a good while ago, and I wrote a whole blog post about the costume design in the first episode, because I thought it was really strong.
Yeah, not the suit design,
no,
the costume.
The civilian clothing that the characters wear. Because I think... Yeah, I do. I think it's really strong, and I think that... It does a far more naturalistic job of what later series, like Wizard and Double, just turned into caricature, really.
Yeah.
But we could talk about that a bit later, really.
It's just on the cusp of the sort of simplistic anime character design thing, isn't it, that came dominantly.
Yeah, but I don't know why we didn't start watching it, because really... I remember just before I was going to come on for the first time that we did Uncommon Cast together, the gender episode, I was doing some research into, like, the precise facts of all lady writers, just so I wouldn't get caught out on things that I hadn't watched yet. Someone on Tumblr said something about Yuri and Ixa and I don't want to give you any spoilers, Matt, but I mean
well, you see Yuri fighting in the first episode, so it's not spoilers.
Yeah, I think it's fairly early you get the impression that she might want Ixa, but yeah, I heard that if I want lady writers, this isn't really the series for that. So then I kind of got interested, and I thought, well, I'm going to see what it does give me. And then it doesn't really go where I might have liked it to, but it's hella good anyway. Like, it's a really hard series to talk about in that way, because it does some really shady things with its female characters, but it doesn't really let you see that, because the things that it does do with them, they're very strongly... written characters, and I don't mean like punching you. I mean, like, they have a real life to them, and you can like them and enjoy them as people. But
they seem like real, like, tough. They're just put in a crap situation. It's actually weirdly convincing.
Yeah, like they are written.
And I hate saying that.
I think I discussed this before somewhere, but in a way, as female characters, they seem like people, and you can really, really enjoy them. But he still writes the story to give them a disservice, which is very, very strange to me. I really don't understand how you can do both of those things so regularly. But I'm probably getting ahead of myself.
Well, can I just give Kiva a little opening pop with a little, like, story? Because, I mean,
Todd, we didn't hear your first impressions.
Yeah.
Is that what you're going into?
My first impressions of Kiva, because, I mean, I think Kabuto is probably the first writer series I finished. And that was, like, at the time. Just after it aired, you know, as soon as it was available. So Kiba was out fairly soon after that. I didn't like the look of Deno, because I was biased and, you know, younger and slightly moodier. And Kiba, I just thought, oh, vampires, come on, you know, just... but, like, because I just got into, a habit of downloading Rider, like, I want it all. For some reason, I just decided I wanted it all. You know, I got all of the stuff. And now I was staying at a friend's, Liverpool, he's one of my best friends, I wouldn't describe this guy as a nerd. He does not buy into that whole lifestyle, that whole angle. But there's certain, like, really nerdy habits that he has. Now, one of these things is he loves, like, monsters and, you know, ghosts and ghouls and mythology and stuff. You know. And I just said, what the hell? He didn't really know anything of Toku, and I just said, what the hell, I'll just show it to him, because, he's not a superhero guy like me. I thought, what the heck? I showed him Faiz because I thought, oh, it's really serious and dark, so it's more mature and more legit, he'll like it. And after the first episode, he was like, oh, it was a bit slow and I didn't really get what was going on. And for some reason, Kiva came up and he said, there's a vampire one. And I put it on, I thought, yeah, I guess, but it's all, like, colourful and stuff. And the moment he saw, in the first episode, when Kiba does his kick and it leaves an imprint of a bat in concrete, he just jumps out of his seat and goes, why the f*** didn't you show me this? He loved it. He absolutely loved it. So I think I was definitely biased against Kiba, and enjoying it with someone else, which is probably true of a lot of things, to get me out of my funk, stop me being so moody. But yeah, then anyway, once Claire got into it, yeah, I was pretty hooked.
I think I watched like 16, 15 episodes without you, and I kept saying, you've got to... I kept wanting to tell you about it and what was happening and why it mattered, and I couldn't because you didn't understand.
It was maybe
So then we had to watch them all again.
The fourth Heisei series that we finished, and maybe my sixth or seventh Rider series overall that I actually finished.
And there we are.
That's very cool. So, because I'm a different person from you two, and I have my own little... I don't know, idiosyncrasies or things that I get, not obsessed over, but that impact me. Some of the biggest stuff, and I'm kind of going from, I don't know, like substantial to surface, I think is how I'm kind of going into my notes. So, like, one of the first things that really hit me strongly was the, like, father and son dynamic or vibe I can feel in the show. And it's not, I don't want to say, it's certainly not weak. But it's not beating you over the head, even though there is specifically, I think, episode 4 or 5 is an episode about, hey, Kiva, what's his name? Wataru, sorry. For some reason, the names aren't sticking with me as well this time. I think because I'm not doing notes, maybe.
They're unusual names,
I
think. And I don't know, I could be blowing smoke here, but from what, you know, they seem musical. In fact, I think they have musical meanings. I mean, Otto, definitely.
Right.
And the surname is Kurenai, which means, like, crimson, I think. So definitely a deep red color, which is, you know, the bloody thing. And, I think they definitely have... their names evoke sound. I'm sorry, I really should have done my homework, but this has only just occurred to me.
Yeah, like, Megumi's last name is... it sounds like some sort of... version of, like, melodious or something.
Right. So I think the names are meant to sound a bit romantic. The episode titles are romantic. It has, you know, hey, compared to Double, it really does carry its theme all the way through.
Yeah.
That gothic, romantic, classical thing that it's got going on in the directing, the music.
I forgot that father-son thing was one of your fictional favorites.
Yeah.
I forgot that would be appealing to you.
Well, what's great about it is that they can't meet yet, can it?
Yeah.
That's what's really cool about it.
But it's so interesting to see. It kind of made me think of, well, hold on. My quick bullet points for Father and Son were, like, I get a sense of legacy. There's definitely aspiration that's explicitly stated, and familial shame and guilt.
Yeah.
and I think all those come through really strongly, and the legacy thing is, when you first see Otoya, he's hitting on Yuri and stuff, but then he kind of fights a Fangire alongside her, but almost like a fool or a clown. Like, it doesn't seem... It seems like he's hiding something.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That he knows about the Fangire, and that, you know, she's obviously part of this clandestine organization, which you find out the name of in episode 6, and Otoya didn't remember it, so I'm not going to remember it just yet.
The Blue Sky Party.
Oh, there you go.
Or group. It's like a political word. It's like the Blue Sky. Yeah. I say party, I'm sure. Different subbers have their own ways of translating it.
Okay, that makes sense. But yeah, like, when Otoya showed up, he seemed like there was all this... In his first experience, with a Fangire, he carries all this, this something, this je ne sais quoi. And, like, it seems like that's imparted to Wataru because he has, he is Kivat, which obviously enables him to be Kiva. And it's interesting to me that, similar to Wizard, where there's no explanation at first of how he got the stuff, he just shows up, hold on, it's not that similar. He just shows up and is able to be Kiva from the first episode. But it feels so natural, and it doesn't feel showy or like a bombastic debut where, as Claire said, there's chunky plastic flying all over the screen. It felt more like we're joining this guy at a certain point in his life, and like, oh, okay, apparently he's a writer. And it feels more like it's about Wataru as a person and... like trying to carry on this weird legacy of his father in two ways. I think by being Kiva, but more importantly, interestingly enough, by trying to recreate the Bloody Rose, the violin that his father played. And it's really beautiful to me, especially because, personally, it just that happens to have a greater effect on me than it does on other people. I don't know how many, but it's not important to quantify it. But he aspires to that, and he partially seems to aspire to that because of the things that his mother said about his father. And it's strange because, we get into the past, and we don't get to see him handing off the belt or the violin or anything like that. We just hear that his mother used to speak highly of him, and then we get to actually see Otoya dealing with Yuri, and it seems like they would be a natural pair, but at the same time, because of the way the show is structured, and in episode 6 we find out that Megumi is Yuri's daughter, it doesn't seem like things are going to happen the way I expect them to.
Isn't it great knowing and not being able to tell him? I'm really looking forward to you finding out how these characters are related.
Yeah.
Because I think they did a good job with that. Because, that's where you can make or break a story like this. You know, what do you reveal? I think they do it really well, which is really surprising and nice.
I think the introduction seeming natural has a lot to do with the trust that the show has in its audience. It expects you to understand, and it expects you to... It takes itself seriously. I was talking about this the other day with Jonathan from Where's My Henshin Belt, about a show and its fans taking it seriously or not, and how that can impact upon its potential audience. I think that it takes its theme seriously, but it also takes the idea of someone potentially being a Kamen Rider seriously. It's not like, oh, we're writing a silly story where unreal things happen. They're writing a story where someone is a Kamen Rider, so they accept that that could be real, because in the world that they've created, it is.
The meaning of a normal person becoming a rider is so much, it's succinctly expressed with no dialogue in that the first time he henshins, because you can't compare it to Wizard. The way he introduces Haruto as an incredibly competent individual, who then henshins into an incredibly competent individual.
Yes.
When you meet Wataru, you get to know him, really quick little classic beats, him interacting with a little sister who's more like a mother, him getting embarrassed by an attractive, slightly older girl, the fact that he's got this ridiculous allergy. That's all established really quickly.
Yeah.
And then when he henshins into Kiba, suddenly he doesn't speak. And he's got this crazy, wild, grappling fighting style where he takes loads of bumps, keeps going on his back. unique style, which is something that I love personally.
Just
to wind up, just by complete contrast, Haruto rides in, looks cool, kicks ass, turns into wizard, kicks ass, rides out.
The henshin is like a look what I can do audience.
Yeah, exactly.
Whereas for Wataru, this look is what he can do. No one, he doesn't expect anyone to look.
Well, it's look what I can do me, which is much more important.
But, the grappling style relates to really nicely, actually. I didn't notice until just then, but Wataru Kiba is the only rider with a cruiser. His
bike
is a proper Harley, and a cruiser is... types of motorcycle come in four or five different basic forms, and that depends on how you sit on them. A cruiser, you sit relaxed, your legs are forward, your hands are forward, but you have a sort of leaning slump, and
that, look like that, a badass.
Yeah, you do. The Easy Rider style.
Yeah.
Of bike, and that on his back, low down. Mm. That's totally aesthetically similar.
Yeah,
that's really good work. Well done, Kiora. I didn't even notice.
Yeah, God, if only they thought more about the kind way to use the bike to give character. Because if you compare that to sort of the classic, the original Hongo, leaning forward on that. What is that? It's like a sports bike, right? It's like a racing bike.
Yeah, it is a dirt bike or racing bike.
But he's hugging it, a missile, because he's so intense, because he's such a classic hero. And then to have Kiva be just leaning back like that. It's because he's a monster, because he's, he's got this conflicting personality.
The father and son thing, though, that's a really good way of using time travel, or not time travel, but time shenanigans in fiction. Like, I was, when you were speaking right. about it then, I was thinking about Back to the Future and the director or director and writer's audio tracks about that, and they were talking about how where the idea came from of Back to the Future, and it was one of them was talking to their parents, and their, I think their dad was like, I was in whatever club, which was like a nerd club, I guess, and this teenage guy, I don't know, okay. this teenage guy is like, sounds if weird. I was in high school with my dad, I would think he was a loser. And like the idea of how that
that's cool
of how that works, like in a person, how a father and a son, or a parent and a child at the same age, how they would relate to each other, how that's not, completely different to how you relate to your father, like, when you are the same age difference as you would be if he's your father.
You're not meant to think of, like, your father or mother, either of your parents, being, like,
you.
In the same league as yourself, you know, they created you, this is a whole different ballgame, and I think Kiva does that brilliantly.
Yeah.
Without time travel, because I can't stand time travel. I think it does it really well because
it doesn't really use time travel. Well, like in the series as a whole, it doesn't really use time travel. There is a time travel film, but the film is not actually really canon.
But we're so used to seeing I was going to say like in all media, we're so used to seeing father and son angle. This is like son and awkward friend, and it's I don't know about you guys, but when I first started watching, I thought, oh no, I really don't want these two to meet. It's going to be so embarrassing for both of them.
Yeah.
I don't have that sense just yet, but I feel like the way that the story's being written, man, I think I love Inoue. I mean, I know it's only been six episodes, I have to see more.
He's a really good writer.
Yeah. And, like, who cares about people being thrown in rivers if he's a damn good writer, right?
Yeah.
But I feel like, it's so hard to say this, but in episode six, Otoya tells Yuri that everybody has a sound to them, has a song, that people are music to some extent, and that he likes the sound of her music, and that's why he wants to be around her.
Yeah.
It isn't just that she's beautiful. There's some intangible aspect to her that he perceives and wants to be around her. At least that's what he says.
Yeah.
And, like, I don't know what to make of that, because thus far in the show, he had been, I don't know, a bit of a cad and, like, a womanizer, and, I mean, you guys, no, you know me a little bit, so you know that sort of thing, or you probably assume that sort of thing is not what I'm into at all.
Yeah.
So I thought, you know, after
I'm
all
not
that,
really either.
Well, yeah, take from two self-affirmed feminists and one absolute definite woman. We don't seek out shows that have guys, you know, aggressively hitting on women that aren't interested.
Really not.
Usually it's horrendously annoying, and this is why it's so crazy that we got into this show, because
Otoya is a very interestingly written character.
And I think Yuri's actor does a damn good job.
Yeah, she does.
Actor, actress, whatever, forgive me.
I
think she's probably one of the best in this show, maybe in the franchise.
And I think Otoya is probably one of the best womanizing characters written.
Right.
That I've seen.
Because
he has the surface caddish aspect, and he does like just get swayed by pretty face or like nice legs or whatever. But he does have the ability also to see women as people, but which is like technically a quality, but that doesn't actually negate the problems that his flirtatious and like overbearingly flirtatious attitudes. I don't want to say too much because I have finished the series and you haven't, and I really don't want to ruin it.
Yeah,
maybe we'll talk more about
pleasantly
that.
Pleasantly surprised by
where
Otoya's personality goes, where his motives go, and where he ends up, and a choice he ends up making, which surprised the heck out of me. And it's not often I'm surprised, but I mean, let's be honest, like. Toku is it's aimed at a younger audience than us,
right?
Even, you know, the Midnight Toku is aimed at a younger audience than us, so we shouldn't necessarily be thinking, well, this is going to surprise, you know, we shouldn't, if we're fairly media savvy, we shouldn't be surprised. Now, I'm not saying that's like a good or a bad thing. I'm just saying it as kind of a fact. And Kiva surprised me. Mm-hmm. And that's, I think, partly why I like it, because it's maybe the only writer series to genuinely surprise me. Sometimes something happens and it's just like, oh, whatever. But sometimes a story is crafted in a fashion that leads you down one path and then pleasantly brings you and knocks down the hedge and you're in another, and it's glorious.
It does so many things. Like, there are some things that I've really, really, really wanted to happen, and they don't, and I knew they wouldn't, but I wanted them to anyway, and I enjoyed it anyway, even though I knew it wasn't going to happen, even though it could, but I knew it wasn't. It was just so much fun watching this series. And having finished it, my opinion on Otoya is, like, completely 50-50. Yeah, like, it's not like I'm unsure. I am sure. I know what I think about him. But it's not like, yes, I'm in favor of him and I think he was a wonderful man. Yeah. And it's not like, no, I hate him. He had these faults and I cannot forgive him. He's like a real person.
He just seems like an acquaintance. And it's like, yeah, okay. I might not be his friend, but it's like, he's had some stuff happen in his life. I'm just going to, okay, you know, I understand his position kind of thing. It's weird. And that's very unlike me.
Yeah, that's very interesting because I feel like there's this kind of lie, potentially, that Watcher has been faced with, and I feel, I guess, I'm, as much as I feel an outsider from him and independent from him, I do identify with him, and, like, I don't want to be crushed by finding out, or by Watcher finding out what an awful guy Otoya could be at times. So, like, I'm really looking forward to seeing the progression to see how he can be so, how he could have behaved so, I don't know, rakishly? Is that appropriate?
It's a beautiful term.
Yes. Yeah.
And then at the end, you know, his wife, I presume, saying such glowing things about him. And this is one of the things I'm most depressed about is that, like, compared to some shows that are supposed to be about mysteries, this show actually, no, not this show, Toshiki Inoue actually sets up these mysteries.
I told you so!
It's so beautiful. Like,
yeah.
The way it's structured and written, they are mysteries, but it's never explicitly stated, like, you are not being told this information and you have to find it out because you are the truth seeker, the detective, or anything like that. It's just like, things happen. It's like, it's almost like looking at real life and, like, not knowing the pieces.
Yeah.
Like my grandfather, he was in Vietnam. I have no idea what happened there. I think he had some PTSD afterwards, and, like, I was never able to talk to him about it. Never, because it hurt him so much, or whatever, that I have no idea what really happened to him. And, like, he was even MIA and stuff like that for a couple months in the jungle. And, like, that's an area in his life that's a complete mystery, and he's gone now, and I'll never be able to, you know, find out or talk to him about those things. So, I guess it's a sad reality.
It's
and
tough
because it really happened. You can't, like, I guess what I'm trying to say is that the way that it's written reflects accurately the way things happen in real life, which sometimes there's questions to which you can never find the answers, and things aren't clearly split up into two episodes and, you know, tied to the monster of the week and stuff like that. And I think, even things like, I don't know the wolf guy from the 80s who becomes the Garu Saber and everything.
Jiro. He's my favorite. Name? Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, he's definitely charismatic and everything. But, like, it's interesting that, in episode 6 you actually get unlike a Sentai where, like, when you get the power up, or in typical Kamen Rider now, when you get a power up based on an individual, you receive a focus episode about them.
Yeah.
The Garu Saber showed up we didn't know Jiro, or I don't think we'd even, maybe we'd seen him in the coffee shop in the 80s, but, like, in episode 6, the fish boy, what's his name?
Ramon.
Okay, well, his weapon thing debuts in an episode where in episode 5 and 6, we get a lot of focus on Jiro and Otoya's relationship in regards to Yuri.
Yeah.
And, like, that's one of the things that I kind of like. I don't know if Inoue's like purposefully kind of being offbeat and not having things match pace or like meet up cleanly like you would assume from a show, you know, from years of watching these shows or even just, you know, seeing a couple seasons of them. But I know that's something I really like too. And
I think he really knows what he's doing.
What was that?
I think he really knows what he's doing. I don't think he's like trying to find his feet. He's got the skill, he's got the equipment, so he can go off piste if he wants to and not worry about finding his way back.
Right, and he wrote on Kuga and Akito as well, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, didn't he do like 5 solid years of writer?
Yeah, I think so.
And pretty much was that.
He did like Gutman. And
he was the Heisei guy, yeah.
Okay.
But like Claire says, I mean, he does have the tools, I think, to, you can kind of trust him as a writer, and that's not to say he doesn't go a bit crazy in Kiva, and he does.
Yeah.
Okay.
There is a slump, which you can at least be prepared for.
Yeah, there are like 2 episodes right in the middle that just, or further towards the end maybe than right in the middle, but just strike them.
Yeah.
Just strike them. Yeah. But he's been working in Toku since 89.
Yeah.
So he has got a full...
Yeah, because he was on the new big Sentai then, Turbo Ranger.
Yeah.
Which was a big deal. I mean, not just because it was kind of a... It was framed as like an anniversary show, but it was about kids...
The first of many, right?
Well, yeah, someone correct me if I'm wrong, but was it not the first Super Sentai to really be about young people?
The Spider-Man show, if you will.
Oh, right. Yeah, they're a group of high school kids, you know, summoned by a fairy to fight against ancient demons with cars.
And their attitude.
Yeah. Only like 2 of them really have attitude. Yeah. Find me 5 teenagers who respect their elders. but I think he's definitely got chops as a guy who is willing, like a guy who's kind of in tune with what's going on. And that's one thing I like about Kiva is that I get the impression watcher he is a modern kid of 2008. I really fell for it, and that the 80s people are in the 80s. I love the historical context.
God, they've done such a good job with the hair.
Yeah, I love the hair. I love the clothes, and I love. Shima, I think, is the name of the head of the Blue Sky Party,
yeah.
And right. The master Akira, the barman, for want of a better expression, their body fat percentage contest. It's great. It doesn't go anywhere, but it's great. Like it's not a plot point. Don't be like, oh, when is the mystery going to be revealed? And there's mouths in the trees.
It just establishes character relationships and character types.
It's just this cute thing between these two like adult men. Who gradually lose their hair. it's great. It's natural and it fits with the period. You get to see a dog grow up.
Yeah.
There's a lot of stuff like that. A lot of sort of simple. It's almost hard to pin it down. It's human stuff.
Yeah. Like the plates on the wall.
Yeah.
The year plates.
Oh yeah.
It doesn't really do anything except remind you that we're in a different time period, but. It also tells you that this master is the kind of guy who will put those plates on the wall and will like have a cafe for that long and change it this much and not change it that much and keep that sense of legacy.
Mm-hmm. And I guess like another thing to go along with legacy is like you have an actual Fangire who was fixated on Yuri and then he's fixated on her daughter and he goes through beat for beat trying to do everything, which, like, I'm curious, because he gets away, and I don't know what happens to him after episode 6.
Oh, man, the spider fang guy.
Yeah.
Geez, that's another great thing. Sorry, I'm kind of interrupting you, but, like, the spider is a classic rider monster, right? So, of course, they're gonna do that. But, like, you expect him to just be killed in the first episode.
I forgot that he wasn't.
Yeah, I think you're meant to.
He does come back later.
Oh, this guy sticks around. Yeah, get used to him.
Yeah, it, like, he's super creepy, and I wonder how much of his idiosyncrasies, I guess, are him as an individual versus him as a Fangire, and, like, I'm not really sure what they want. I mean, it's interesting. I think I've heard this as a spoiler, but I will say that I will frame it this way instead for those who haven't seen Kiva yet. It is interesting to me to note that all the Fengire that Wataru has faced thus far have been Fengire that we've seen in the 80s that somehow survived.
Mm.
Yeah.
Or escaped or whatever. So it's interesting to see where that goes, because it seems like you guys have made references to Ixa, and I know of an Ixa character, but like I don't know who that person is. Unfortunately, we didn't get to see Nago transform, so I have no idea who he is as a writer.
It's better to think of Ixa as just like the technology, because it's one of those up for grabs, you know, like birth belts. Yeah. It's not tied to a particular character.
Essentially a gun.
Yeah, a lot of people are Ixa. It's easy to list characters that don't become Ixa.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's
yeah, even it's less of a title than it is.
Yeah.
Like you wouldn't be like Kamen Rider Ixa is not really a concern. It's not that kind of thing. It's not like a knighthood.
Yeah. If you
weirdly, it's not like a knighthood. It's just something that is available.
If you want to be specific, there are 6 Kamen Rider Ixas that I can think of, and you've met, I think, maybe half of them already.
But you, like, most of them, you wouldn't be like, that person is it.
No, not at all.
Just because it's...
Yeah.
It's not, like, keyed to your blood or whatever.
Yeah.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
Alright, that's interesting. Okay. But, like, I don't know when Ixa comes up and when is that developed, and I think that'll be interesting to see. Let's see.
Well, can I just say the Fangire? Like, something I often criticize in Rider, because sometimes I can be quite a critical person, is the baddies. Because I think, honestly, it's something that has... In Heisei, if you compare Heisei monsters to Showa monsters, it's so obvious that there was this company-wide thing. Let's make the monsters more sympathetic. Let's make them more like misguided beings rather than a terrorist organization or an evil cult. Let's make them... They started in Heisei becoming races, you know?
Yeah.
And you always end up having, like... Rather than being Shaka, it's now the Grongi. Rather than it being God, it's now the Fangires. And there's much more room for manoeuvring, I think, in that within a kid's show, because it's easier to buy... Well, it's not easy to buy, but it's just... You're more tempted to then have a bit of good and bad, a bit of grey area with the motivations. The Fangires are among my favourite Kamen Rider villains because... They have such a strong structure, and so they have such a simple motivation. It's simplistic even, but there's no BS, which I love. There's no mysteries beyond, you know, what are they after? There's no, what's a better word for mystery? You know, like with the, sometimes we've heard with the Invest, complaints, you know, like what's going on here? You know, there's a difference between a compelling mystery and downright confusion, right?
Right.
Yeah. So for me, at least, the Fangire, and I hope for everybody else to watch this, they were just a solid group of monsters. There was no this or that. There were no worries. There was no, you know, double talk or backtracking. It's just, this is what they want. These are the ones that are in charge. But then within that solid structure, that's the great benefits of setting up something with such a solid structure. There's so much room for messing around. I don't know if you know, Matt, I don't know if you've gotten to this point, it's not a spoiler, but the Fangires have a top 4 guys who are named King, Queen, Bishop, and Rook, right?
Oh, did not know that.
Okay, yeah, cool. So they're titles, it's not really a spoiler, and this is my thing. It's really weird to me, one thing, I never really got into the A-Team, and I totally should have, because one of my favourite things in fiction is when you have a group of characters, and it sounds so stupid, but it's so often this doesn't happen, a group of characters that each have a specific task, and do it, right? Now that sounds really, that's just everything. No, it isn't. It seriously isn't.
Well, obviously isn't happening in Gaim with the Genesis writers.
Oh, exactly, yeah, I brought it up, didn't I? I don't know where it comes from, but I want my characters to have jobs, I want them to have roles, occupations, whatever they might be. And one thing I love about the Fangire is that each of those ranks has a specific task that they tell you in the show. Mm-hmm. And it's got that great air of, like, this is an ancient rule that we've set out, and it's all gothic and operatic, and, you know, we must stay true to the rules. And they're like, but what if you break the rules? And there's no, like, until the very last episode, and it's kind of a joke, there's no, oh, well, here's the super Fangaia. Right. One thing that kind of bothered me about Blade, much as I love it, was when they started creating artificial undeads.
Yeah.
I think it kind of worked, like, after the fact, but during it was like, okay, now that the gloves are off, there's no rules, you know. And one thing I love about Fangaia is the rules.
I think that that having characters have a purpose and a job or whatever is because it's motion. Even if they're not actually actively striving for that right now, you know that they will or that they have. And so that's just that story happening.
Right.
You know that.
Oh, yeah, it's story.
You're not just left still
waiting
for something to happen.
It might not be plot necessarily, but it's story. It's such strong world building.
Yeah, if you know that this person has to do this and this person has to do this, and you can see that almost certainly that is going to mean that they're going to have to oppose each other at some point, then even if right now you're just watching a scene of two people drinking coffee, then you know there's something coming, definitely, and it's going to be cool and exciting, and how are they going to do it? And it gives you more to think about.
Yeah.
Even if you don't know you're thinking about it, there's
again,
still something there.
No spoilers, no plea, Matt, and people listening who haven't seen Kiva, you'll just forget this, because it's kind of a small thing, but, like, you know, it's set up, once you start finding out about how the top four, or whatever they're called, of the Fangaias work, the queen's job is to execute traitors. And the bishop's job is to uphold all of the laws. So already, you don't even need to know the story. You know something's going to go wrong there. You know, because basically they've got the same job. They're basically, well, we both have to uphold the law. They're just, you know, the bishop's job is more general. It's described as being more of a general thing. He has to make these, like, carries a book around. He's like, is this, he's like an administrator. Whereas the queen is much more active. She, if a Fangaia does something... Yeah, I know. If a Fangaia does something, she kills them. And you know that they're going to come to blows.
Yeah, because if you have two characters with the same purpose, then you wouldn't do that unless they're going to have different opinions.
Yeah.
Well, exactly. Or unless, I mean, because I have a big government jag that I'm always on, like, unless they're supposed to be, like, adversarial, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
I'll be curious to see if there is a balance that they're supposed to create by being contradictory forces, but you're right, because it's fiction, you can definitely see that just those two, I guess, the sameness of their positions, it's going to overlap and cause conflict, which is always interesting.
And I'm sure that was set up on purpose. Claire, by the way, just gave me a spoiler nose boop. Because she thought I was going to ruin, like, the whole show right there. Because I could have done, but I didn't.
You could have done.
it wouldn't ruin that.
No,
I
was
quite like, thank you for that.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Next part.
If you want to get back to the points, we have touched on conflicting motivation right there. Multiple motivations you had in the notes, Matt. So we have...
Right.
You know, I'm trying to bring it back.
And I think we've already talked about complex characters just in, like, Otoya... a little bit in Wataru. I just want to hit real fast. And we talk about mysteries and reveals, too. I think we need to have, you know, tangent, and you listeners can hear this, too. I think we need to have a whole episode about mysteries and reveals and whether or not they make a story good, because I am of the opinion that they do not. It's all about the execution and the structure and, like, dramatic irony and... you know me, Star Wars is part of the motivation for this, but I think legitimately there's a discussion to be had there, and I think it could be really good.
I think especially since mystery has become cliched, I think especially since every new show thinks it has to have a twist, a mystery.
Yeah, what is up with that? That's something we discussed at that time, too. Maybe they just saw Sixth Sense and were like, no, we have to do this.
Completely right. I agree with you. Yeah, that is what happened.
It's funny, I say that as a person who has liked every M. Night Shyamalan movie that I've seen, and I haven't seen, like, Avatar or anything after.
Have you seen The Happening?
I saw The Happening, and I didn't like that.
Oh, wow, we were going to have a whole podcast about Matt loving The Happening. That would have been amazing.
Sorry.
Okay.
And it seems so out of character for him, because it was just, like, so brutal, and it's like, no, go back. Go back to being Hitchcockian, please.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Anyway.
What a comparison. Okay.
Okay, on strong characters, at this point, Matt, who is your favourite?
Very good question.
Ooh, I do not know. I really love Yuri and Megumi. or Megumi. What's the proper pronunciation on that?
Megumi, I guess.
Megumi, okay. Like, they're just so fantastic. Like, I have to say that I have an issue with the show and Yuri right now because she was tasked by Shima to just, like, follow around Otoya. Mm-hmm. But, like, when she got captured, actually, it's interesting. Mother and daughter, they get captured, and they have these useless boys with them, and they want to give up right away because things aren't going their way. And they both say to the guy that they're with, like, no, we're going to find a way to get out of this, and, like, you can't give up just now. I think I like both of them mm-hmm. right now the most because they're so darn heroic in their hearts and spirit, and, I don't dislike Wataru, but I'm waiting for him to grow, I think it'll be cool to see his growth and transformation, but to some extent, Yuri and Megumi are already arrived, and Otoya and Wataru both have to grow into the men they should be, and they're being prodded by these women, who are important to them for different reasons, and I don't sense a romance is going to happen between Megumi and Wataru, but I don't need it to either. She can just be, like, the big sister, like he made reference to. Or maybe Kivat made reference to that. Which, by the way, I like Kivat. It's like a weird thing. It doesn't make sense, and I'm waiting for the explanation on that. I'm also waiting for the explanation on the castle and Jiro and his fellows in the in the castle.
Oh, but, yeah. Like, that is quite a good running mystery, actually. And it's, Kivat specifically. I mean, you do wonder why is there a is he mechanical? We don't really know. It's a bit strange. But, I mean, I think...
Well, it's the toy thing, really,
isn't it? I always talk about...
And if there has to be a toy thing, at least it's an actual character.
I always
character.
Complain about the gimmicks not coming into it, the form changing and the tech and stuff not coming into the plot, and Kiba joins Deno and, you know, a few other series with just doing it really well, and I think setting a benchmark that was unfortunately not followed. You know, you already know, I think, Matt, that the guys who live in the castle are his form changers.
Yeah,
they turn into weapons that he uses. It's like Transformers or something. And in Deno, of course, the guy is possessed. He literally becomes a different character when he changes form. You know, and you can use that. And I think that's such a great thing that should have become a tradition, and it unfortunately didn't. You know, a decade onward, I think that... Maybe O's, I think, the form changing is... I haven't seen all of O's, but I hope it's a bit more significant there.
I think you can debate that, but I think definitely, to just, you know, speak more highly of Kiba, I think one of the great things is that you see Jiro in the 80s out and about. He isn't just this entity stuck in the castle. Like, he turns into this monster, this wolf monster or whatever, but, like, there is something to him. Like, I get the sense that this, especially, like, with his copy challenge to master, like, I get this sense that he is this complete, like, he's a whole person and he just, like, kind of wandered into the show.
Yeah.
And, I don't know if we're going to get backstory to him, and I kind of don't care. Not because I'm not interested, but just because I don't feel like we need to go off on every little tangent. But he definitely seems like this really interesting person who I think we can just get a couple lines from every now and then.
Well, it's a mark of a strong performance, I think. If you don't need backstory, and that, again, is one of the things we've maybe been complaining about in Gain, is when we're given these sort of touches of, oh, they knew each other when they was kids, and it seems very contrived and rushed. You know, we didn't necessarily need that. We want to know these characters now.
Okay, let me ask you about some other characters.
Wait, technically Jiro's 80s stuff is backstory.
I suppose so.
Yeah, technically.
That's an interesting point, I think.
Yeah, I guess.
You get to know a character in two different eras, you know?
I feel like there's so much more to him, though, that...
Yeah.
Like, you could probably have a whole show about him. Like,
I'm sure the guy tried. That actor's been in a couple of Tokyo now, hasn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's definitely in the Hibiki movie. There's the big polar bear on him.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Well, he pops up as Jiro somewhere, doesn't he?
Does he?
Like, past Jiro.
I don't know.
What movie is
in
that?
In a movie, in like a, maybe a Deno
maybe
movie.
Maybe a Deno movie, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, but you see those three guys.
Deno versus Decade in Japan.
In
ancient Japan.
The olden times.
That's right. God, yeah, because the Imagine Possession. Anyway, tangent. So.
Because I said that Jiro is my favourite, and that, like... It's true, but also, I have three, really.
Can I pause you real fast?
Yeah.
Is Jiro as in first son, or is Jiro similarly musical, in its etymology.
Well, the ro is the kanji for wolf.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay. I had no idea.
Okami can also be read as ro, short. And I think the G may... I think it means, like, next or something, like next in line?
Hmm. Interesting.
Because he's... Well, I mean, you will learn a little about his backstory. You know that he's not a fangire, right? You figured that much out.
Oh, yeah, I figured that. He's some other creature.
Yeah, because there are other races of monsters, and that's the kind of behind-the-scenes monster war.
That made me really happy. I like to see...
Yeah.
Like, vampires are fine and all.
Oh, you got to have
more. They can be fun. But wolfmen and
lagoon creatures and Frankenstein. And a creature.
Yes, yes, pile it on. Yeah. Give me more of that.
And then, of course, you're left thinking, oh, there's no mummy. And then you watch the movie, mummy.
So cool.
Jiro isn't... He's my favourite character for some reasons, but then for other reasons I have others. And you've already mentioned Megumi. She would be one of my other favourite characters, and also my workout inspiration, because...
I thought Cassie Ho was your workout inspiration.
No, she just tells me what to do.
Yeah?
But if you're doing a push-up and it sucks,
yeah,
and you want to just fall down, then you can think, no, would Megumi fall down? And she wouldn't, you know she wouldn't. So, well, I won't either then.
Yeah.
Because, like you said, she has that heroic spirit.
And then she'll stuff her face afterwards.
Yeah, and that's good to see. That feels good. And then finally, although not at the point that you're at, my other favourite is Nago. What do you think of him?
Oh, wow. You know what? Hold on. I'm going to keep you in suspense.
Okay.
I'll be right back. I'll be right back, okay?
Okay.
And I'll tell you all about Nago.
Okay.
Okay, sorry.
Matt doesn't know you're Nago, does he?
No, he doesn't.
I'll just say, while we're recording ourselves, just throw my hat in the ring. I like Megumi because, maybe not because, that's unfair, but one big reason I like her is, I think it's kind of a cliche, maybe. Maybe someone who watches more Japanese TV than me could tell me, good-looking lady who slurps her food and acts, like, rashly. Because, I mean, Megumi's, her dialogue, her syntax, her dialect is very informal. She's very aggressive. And she's definitely not, you know, Yamato Nadeshiko.
Yeah.
And I think that's done on purpose, of course. And it reminds me of Mari from Faiz, how she's introduced.
Yeah, I was...
But what I really like about Megumi, and I don't know if this is an era... I don't know if it's an era thing, because, heck, you know, it's been a few years since Faiz when we get to Kiba. Megumi is... she works as a model.
Yeah.
Mari doesn't. And Megumi is much more... glamorously made up, you know. Mari seems like a much more normal.
Yeah, Megumi wears outfits.
Yeah, Mari seems like a traveling gal. She's got a job, you know. She's got a job to do. Much more down to earth. Megumi's much more of a wacky makeup character.
Yeah.
But that works really well because I really like because there's just not enough of it. Okay, if you're gonna have a conventionally attractive woman in your show, let her do stuff.
Let her be a person.
And Megumi gets to do loads of stuff.
Yeah,
she gets pissed off. She gets
sad. Pissed.
Yeah, she cries, she gets drunk, she stuffs her face, she gets in fights, she flirts, she tries to, turn Wataru into a man.
Yeah.
All this big sister
she's
stuff.
She's actually written it in a quite similar fashion to... What's her name? From Lion Mary G.
Yes.
What's her name?
Yes.
Forgotten it, but...
That's terrible.
They
isn't
have
it?
A similar
they
level
are.
Of
they are very similar characters.
Personhood plus hot girlness.
I feel really bad that we don't remember her name, but yeah, exactly. Both brilliant characters for that reason. And again, it sounds terrible, but I'm thinking in my head, I'm pretty sure that's quite a common trope in anime. But if we need more of them in live action, I don't care if you call them
well. I mean, it depends
big
what
sisters.
You mean by common trope because. I wouldn't be surprised. Like I was going to say earlier, when you were talking about how much of it there is in television in general.
Yeah.
Like it could easily be a fetish thing, like light,
right.
Like not super sexual, but
because
like in a ways other writer stuff, he does like the mothering girlfriend.
Yeah.
Who will prepare the food for him and pick spinach out his teeth and whatever.
They seem like one
so
of
like
the...
So, like, it's possible that that is, like, another branch of
the harem
of that,
manga,
yeah.
You have that one, don't you?
Right, right.
You have the one who's taller than all the rest and she's, like, she looks after you and she's a bit in your face and she's the only one that's done it before and all that crap.
But... But in Kiva, exactly. She's not positioned in that same way, and she's not caricaturized as much either. She, like, any caricature of a woman, any objectified character, will have traits that real people have.
Yeah.
And having those traits doesn't necessarily make a character rubbish, but being those traits would. And Megumi doesn't, she isn't her traits, she just is a person who has them.
Right.
Which is very refreshing. Yeah, refreshing too.
Yeah, because I think a lot of people as well will confuse our desire for strong female characters with a desire to see female characters fighting monsters.
Yeah.
It's not about that, you know, it's nice that she does.
Yeah.
But it's even nicer that she gets loads of dialogue.
Yeah.
And her character occupies different spaces, she goes to different places, she has different relationships with different characters, and she shows a variety of emotions.
Yeah, it's not really a spoiler to say that neither Megumi nor Yuri become the writer of the series, because you know that. We've discussed how only one series prior to Gaim has female writers in the series proper, and that's Hibiki. And
barely counts.
Even that.
Yeah.
But neither Yuri nor Megumi become Ixo or become any other writer, really. Like, they have a little moment, maybe.
They do.
What? Spoilers!
Alright.
But but they don't become Kamen Rider Yuri, Kamen Rider
Megumi. Yeah, definitely.
But they're not diminished as characters by this. It diminishes female people in the Kamen Rider franchise that, again, a series is written to fence off Rider from girls. But the characters themselves, within their specific context, outside, like, apart from the wider context, they are characters who are still written with a full range of emotion and opinion and experiences. It is bad that Inoue chose not to actualize them as writers, but it doesn't make the series a bad series.
No.
In terms of an entertainment experience.
Compare them with Rinko in Wizard. You know, a character who, by her role, she's supposed to have infinitely more authority in society than either Yuri or Megumi. And she doesn't.
Mm.
She has less authority than anybody. And I'm sure someone's going to say, oh, there's this one episode where she arrests a guy. Oh, good. She did her job.
Yeah. And actually, yeah, her motivation is entirely built around her father. Good grief, it is a breath of fresh air to have Megumi with her entire motivation built around her mother.
Yeah, we haven't even mentioned that. That's really nice.
Where do you find that? Yeah. Almost nowhere.
It's got the father and son, mother-daughter thing.
It would have been so easy obvious to make Megumi about what her dad did,
yeah,
or who her dad was, dad, boys, boys, men.
It seems so obvious, but it's great. I mean,
it's amazing to see her...
Mm. If a girl has
thinking
to be
of her mother in that way.
If a girl has to be a legacy hero.
Yeah, and
which
gaining
is
strength and in tender ways and in combat ways as well from the memory of her mother and her mother's skills. That's amazing.
Are you going to spoil things?
No, okay, I don't think this is a spoiler, folks. Let me pare it down a little.
I already said the movie wasn't canon.
Regarding Megumi and... Yeah, but this was at the time they were trying to be, but I really don't think fits in.
It's not.
Because Denno really tried to fit its movies in, and everything after, not decade, but Double and Onward really tried to fit their movies in. Kiva doesn't manage it. But yeah, anyway.
I think that maybe Inoue is just like, well, I'm not having that.
That mother and daughter, mother and daughter, father and son thing. I mark for Yuri and Megumi much more than I do for Otoya and Wataru. I think Matt's really touched on this, that he maybe likes that relationship a little more, he enjoys seeing that relationship fleshed out a little more.
Mm-hmm.
Although, I'm sure he's waiting for the moment when Wataru and his father, acknowledge each other in a more obvious way. But, like, now that, having seen the whole series, I really, if I had to choose a relationship, Yuri and Megumi's got much more of a reaction out of me than Wataru and Otoya's. And that's not to downplay it, because obviously it's important. It's the central thing of the series. But I think the way Inoue writes it is stronger.
Mm.
You know, Todd, you kind of mentioned, the two of them meeting Wataru and Otoya. And, I never even really thought of it. I always thought that, okay, well, his dad's, somewhere in the past or dead or something like that. Because, obviously, well, why would he be gone otherwise unless something happened to him?
You assume they're both dead, right? I mean... Not consciously, but you just kind of think, well, their kids are adults now. They're both meant to be about 20, so
right.
you just kind of assume.
Yeah, and they're obviously not in the picture, so something must have happened to them.
Yeah.
Which makes a lot of sense. But it isn't explicit at the same time, so it could be, the writing playing with expectations, so that's a very good thing. Let me see. Oh, yes. One thing. I'll be interested to see if I feel that same way, because I'm not sure I will. I enjoy both relationships a lot, and I just can't wait to see. I look forward to seeing them develop more and more. And it's interesting because they're developing in a weird, almost passive way. More like as we learn things about their parents, the kids kind of remember them or are reminded of their circumstances. Yeah. That's a really interesting structure. Like,
it's another way of doing it.
Like, who thought of that besides Inoue, you know?
But the they didn't even have to do the whole 1986 thing.
Yeah.
They do, and I think that's... It's really surprising, and it's easy to follow.
It does. It works really nicely, and I'm really annoyed that Wikipedia, among other places...
Back-ass way that it does it.
Spaces it out and has what happens in 1986 and then what happens in 2008 as, like, their own separate chunks. That's so annoying. I tried to read through these first six episodes to really remind myself so we could talk about this. But I can't do it because it's not written properly.
Yeah, it's, like, completely insulting the way that the show is written. There's a reason Inoue wrote it that way, guys. That's the story. Development is very important overall in Kiba. The way that some of the characters changes is important and surprising. You've said you can't really comment on Nago yet.
No, he didn't. He said he wasn't going to do it now.
Oh, I'm sorry, but okay. Well, spoilers. Nago changes quite a lot, and it's cool. And
it's so nice when you watch it.
And another character that I believe you haven't met yet goes through.
No, don't mention that.
No,
don't mention that.
I'm just saying.
Don't mention that.
All right.
At all.
All right. He has no idea.
But really, 100%.
Rocker. Okay.
Okay. So Nago. I thought that Wataru's at first blush, I thought his hey, do you want to be my dad? line to him was a little strong and strange, but kind of in retrospect, looking back, you know. Retrospect, it's so strange to say after a couple episodes, but, like, you really get a lot from those few episodes. I can kind of see it, especially because he's just found out that his father was this not-nice guy that he thought he was, and he sees Nago as kind of maybe embodying the qualities that he thought that his father had, that he was told that his father had, and those are the things to which he wants to aspire, so it sounds silly for him to say, oh, do you want to be my dad? But really, what he's saying is, do you want to be my aspirational figure because I've just lost faith in mine?
Yeah. But it works so well with the idea of defining yourself that comes out in Kiba. The fact that he's trying to create a violin identical to his father's rather than just coming up with his own. The fact that he spends so much time and pisses off so many people trying to make a colour, you know, that's just copied to emulate a colour. And the idea of everyone having their own music, it's so obvious that Wataru is just imitating his father's music. And again, as you just put out, you know, he's latching onto other people to try and construct his own personality.
Yeah. It's interesting. I'm sorry, I just think I had personal insight.
a valuable lesson for some people out there, I think. Defining yourself based on other people or other things rather than, you know, your principles.
Yeah, and I guess, it kind of echoes back, you know, to get back to Nago in a minute, it kind of echoes back to him, you know, being allergic to the foul air in this world, and even, like, Jiro mentions something about the foul air, or, like, kind of toxic air that everybody else breathes. I can't wait to see that, explained a little more, and I don't feel like it's a bad thing, I just feel like it's a seed that's waiting to be, you know, waiting to bloom into something more important, or maybe rather it's the remnant of something that came before it, and it'll be interesting to see that play out. But he is kind of living in someone else's shadow, and it's sad, because really he should be trying to do his own thing. You can be inspired by others, and I wonder how much of this is going to play out in the series as a theme, that like, yeah, take inspiration from the things that others have done, but act for yourself and act on your own, because like, you could kind of presume that Megumi, you know, knew of her mother's involvement in the Blue Sky Party, and she wanted to do that too. And I actually think she explicitly explains or states in one episode, like, why she wants to be, well, she says she wants to fight to protect the music within her and others. And I don't know. I don't know where I'm going with that. So I'll stop and just say, I'll just talk about Nago, and I think I know that's a very kludgy transition, but I'm really at a loss for what to say to add to that. But it's very interesting and compelling, and the show definitely makes me want to keep watching to find out what's going on.
She just
and to
wants
learn
to
more
dance
about these interesting characters
for everybody. She just wants to dance for the people and protect her town that she loves so much.
Yeah. Okay. So yeah, Nago. He seems super badass. He's more, to me, he's cooler than Tsukichi Narumi, because he doesn't,
controversial.
Like, as much, yeah, I know, as much as he kind of dresses flashy, and has sort of a statement that he makes that edges on sort of religious undertones, as opposed to count up your sins, the, like, be reborn thing, like, that's really interesting, and like, you guys know I'm all for the death penalty and killing monsters and things like that, but like, also, I don't just have a bloodlust, I am a religious person, and I understand the whole concept of, you know, being born again, and like, that even goes back, into rabbinic things, being born from above. It's like saying, like, cast off your, it's basically just talking about like starting a new life, and he's giving these people an opportunity to, you know, pay for their crimes and actually be, like, corrected by the correctional structure that they have in Japan, whatever that is. I don't know how the prisons work there, but, like, we call them correctional facilities in the U.S., but for the most part, they're not. They are more punitive. Yeah. And, like, in a really, really bad way. Like, there isn't even constructive, like, hey, you guys, you know, grow food on this property and, like, sustain yourselves or sell it or, you know, learn a useful skill so that when you get out, you can do that. And, like, we can get into a whole debate about that. And, like,
yeah.
I don't know. I feel like let's have sweeping – well, I'm going to go on a tangent a little bit. Let's have sweeping reforms and, like, let's kill people really fast who deserve it. But everybody else, let's work really, really hard to, like, help them become better people.
You're a man of extremes.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, to some extent, I feel like free up the like, California specifically wastes so much money keeping these people on death row, and they lead these lavish prison lives. I know that's kind of a contradictory statement and kind of, I don't know, arrogant.
I understand where you're coming from.
To say that, but, like, if these people have been found to be guilty, like, let justice be served swiftly. If the death penalty is legal here, then let's carry it out quickly so that the resources we waste on stretching out their life on death row can be redistributed towards the people who are in prison, and we can hopefully reform them.
You set up a rule, you owe it to yourself to stick to it, I suppose.
Yeah.
And I can see it from your perspective, because, I mean, I'd never really thought about it this way before, but if you believe in a spiritual rebirth, if you believe in some form of life after death, then maybe the death penalty seems very different to you. Maybe it doesn't seem like, you know, killing a guy. I hadn't really thought about it that way before. But I mean, at risk of, you know, talking about Kamen Rider, I can see how you'd, like, maybe warm to, which is really weird, how you'd warm to Nago's methods, but he's, don't you get it, Matt? He's the bad rival rider. You're meant to think he's too
really,
harsh.
This is really interesting to me, because I thought Nago was the most awful dweeb at this point.
Really?
I really did. I thought he was such a bogus idiot. Because faking.
In
he
universe,
is not,
though, you didn't think it was bad writing?
No.
Yeah, okay.
He is not as cool as he pretends to be.
Yeah.
And to me, I look at his, like, his dark looks and his studied movements and his extreme morality and and so on as just a complete, he's putting it on. He's putting it on, like, as much as Shota.
Did he know
he's,
he worked,
like, a different Shota.
Did he know he worked on Tabata?
Yeah.
I think he knew he couldn't catch that same lightning in a bottle, and I think Nago may have been an intentional satire of Tendo.
Do you think?
I think he may have been thinking, I want to have another cool character.
Oh, that's interesting.
Like, what's the point of just imitating? Let's get postmodern, let's deconstruct that goofy, that role model. Because then that makes Wataru so much like Kagami.
Because I see Nago as, like, a different go-around of...
Oh, Hojo.
Hojo. He's like a different version of him.
He acts similarly. He's very stilted.
He thinks that he is totally right and the complete best and that everyone else is way stupid.
Well, we're not meant to sympathise with him, are we? That's why Matt fascinates me with his opinion, because he's the right one. You're meant to think, ooh, this guy's doing it wrong.
I don't know. Maybe you are supposed to think that he's cool and then it's revealed. I don't know. But he just, I say it's like Shota. I mean Shota done on purpose. Like, the opinions that you and I share about Shota, but done on purpose. Because I find him very patronizing.
He is half-boiled, isn't he?
And, I mean, that seems like, I think the thing is that you like about him, I am like, well, step off there for a second, fella, because you don't have that authority over me. And not that I am a criminal, but if I was, he would say the same things. And I'm not into that. I'm not your business. You're just... a vigilante.
You're
just a bounty hunter. You don't have the right to tell me that. And I can see how it would appeal to you, and I can see how it could be done in a reasonable way. But no, I was finding Nago a complete
loser.
Yeah, I really wasn't on board with him until episode 13, which has the most amazing title: Unfinished Daddy Fight. episode 13 is one of my just absolute favourite moments in all of Kamen Rider, because it is the best use of police ever. It is perfect.
We haven't watched Kubo.
And I was so into, like, this one thing that happens with Nago and with the police. And I was like,
I
cannot even believe this is happening, and it's amazing.
Oh, yeah.
It was just perfect, just beautiful, perfect, brilliant writing.
I forgot.
It's taking the story and the world and the idea so seriously. Not over earnest, but like it's real. Goodness.
If Shotaro had had a scene like that, I would have kept watching.
Absolutely, yeah.
I would have
it
kept would have
watching
saved
Double completely.
Oh my goodness!
Just one thing could have turned the whole thing around.
Oh,
it's that
yeah.
good. It's,
yeah,
I love
wow.
it.
I hope people listening are getting this. The thing that the way Nago responds to the police. Imagine if Shotaro had done that rather than playing. Oh, he's cooler than the police,
goodness.
And the police are just goofs. No, no. Imagine put him in that situation.
Huge smile
and
in
then
this room.
Just think where the series could have gone. But, you know, hypothesis.
And then it happens again later as well.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Yeah, well, I mean, Megumi calls him out for being a jerk.
Yeah.
And, like, putting up this front. And I don't know him. So, like, I didn't catch that from, like, when he took down Ramirez from Kyoruger. He took down this white guy.
The white guy.
Well, who I believe plays Ramirez in Kyoruger, but that's not...
He's certainly a large, bearded white man.
Yes, he is.
Country of some sort.
Who speaks Nihongo desu?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Let me see.
He's speaking German, actually, wasn't he, the character?
Yeah,
I remember him.
That's interesting.
That's what I remember.
But, like, I didn't... It's complicated, because, like, I see the points about, like, he's, you know, being a jerk and putting up a front, but at this point, like, I'm not a fanboy of his, but, like, he's cool on an exterior level, definitely, like, skin deep, I can see, like, oh, yeah, this guy is kind of cool, and, you know, he's a really tough fighter, and Wataru appreciates that, and I can see that being cool, too, because he's not, like, the angry jerk... writer protagonist. Like, even though he wants to kill Kiba, you know, Shima has even said, and Megumi echoed this, like, she tried to attack Kiba when she first saw him, so apparently Kiba is this unknown quantity Like a legitimately unknown quantity, not just we don't know how high his power level is. like, there must be some danger in either the Kiva system or in the pairing that is known to higher ups in the Blue Sky organization that has bled down to some of their subordinates. And, like, I don't know how big it is. It might just be Shima.
Shima is the leader. Yeah, spoilers. It is a very small organization. That's what's cool about it.
It's not really spoilers. It just doesn't develop any further. Yeah. Like, it's not revealed.
No, but that's what I like about it, and that's why I like that they use the word party, and I think, you know, I did some checking, and fans do seem to call it, I think the subs we watch call it the organization, and that's not the word they use. I think they do that on purpose, because it makes it seem like much more of an independent grassroots, like, little, you know, political group, rather than a company with investors or whatever, and a skyscraper and a table with a crap tablecloth. It's not Yggdrasil. It's not at all. It's like, it's the monster hunting socialist worker party. You know, there's headquarters around the country. There's little bases of people, but you know, it's much more grassroots, and it has a much sort of clearer goal. And yes, my brother was a member of the Socialist Worker Party, which is why it was the first thing that came to mind. But yeah, they're not even like, they're not, you know, the whatever you guys have, the Democrats. They're the whatever, you know?
There's the big D Democrats and the little D Democrats.
Right. Well, they're a small party that just has a goal that is much clearer, and they're not all weighed down with all the stuff you get when you're higher up. And that's what I like about it. I thought it was kind of cool. I was disappointed at first because I thought, oh, they've not bothered to flesh out this organization. But I like them because, are they good? You don't, because they're after Fangire, and is Kiva a Fangire? You know, you don't know that.
It's a question.
Yeah.
I think maybe our different responses to Nago could just have to do with being, I mean, it sounds super obvious, but like different people.
Right.
Because he probably isn't a threat to you. But he could be to me, because he is a man who thinks of himself as an authority. And he kind of wins against me. So I regard him as an enemy at this point, where he's someone who's given himself authority that is sort of supported by the social, you know, order.
Yeah.
So I regard him immediately.
Oh, he's a dangerous element, isn't he?
Yeah, I look at him and I think, right, he could... you know, wound me or something. Yeah. So my evaluation of his character is based on what he could get away with, I guess. Mm. And would he try?
Yeah, and I wonder if part of my, I guess, I wonder how much that is accurate, but I wonder how much of that can be attributed to him being with the Blue Sky organization and my presumption that they are a force for good because they fight the Fangire. So why would they have, although they pull Otoya into the organization, into the party or the group too, and he's kind of like really wild. And I mean, Yuri states her objections to Shima about bringing him in because of his personal life and how messy it can be, how complicated that can make things for them. So I guess my presumption was, like, well, if he's with them, then he must be an okay guy. And, like, I don't know, like, maybe it's because I'm American, too. Like, I don't have a problem with bounty hunters, necessarily. Like, I understand, like, I get the whole, you know, like, cops versus private detectives and, like, versus bounty hunters thing, like, where they have problems with each other or, you know, these vigilantes, you know. You know the whole classic thing of you know, the captain chewing his cigar. I can't have you running around like you're knocking down all these doors. And like, I get that, but at the same time, it just, the way he was first played, I had no doubts that, oh, okay, he must be a good guy. And then it got a little more complicated when Megumi called him out, and then when he wants to kill Kiva just like indiscriminately. And like, I think it's even, I don't know, it's hard. He seems so much more complex than just like, oh, I think this guy could be dangerous. Because, well, I guess, you know, maybe I should see that. Because he wants to kill Kiva even though he doesn't know who Kiva is. He just sees it as a threat and wants to destroy the person who is Kiva. And then, like, there's that really awkward moment where Wataru's trying to tell him, like, I'm Kiva.
Yeah.
And he thinks he's joking. And maybe that gives a little more insight into his character, that he thinks Wataru is incapable of being Kiva because he's so something. Like, so dweeby or whatever, that, like, he's just like, oh, you can't be Kiva. Like, you're, like, that's a beyond you. So I can see
He does buy into the social order, like a shy person can't have power. He believes in that kind of thing, which is what he draws his power from. Like, a cool person can do that, so I will be a cool person, so I can do that. It's a manipulation of what people, of like unspoken rules that I just don't really feel is fair play, I suppose.
Yeah, I can see that, and it's interesting because your, I don't want to say accusation, but like the way you ascribe my, I guess, like political and religious background or whatever as like reasons I would like him, I'm not sure.
I mean, that's what I thought you were saying, but I just think that he, like, as a man, he's not really on a higher level than you. Socially, right. Like, you would meet and you would, both of you would assume both of you to be equals, but if I meet men or boys, sometimes they don't assume that I'm their equal, and that, you know, that sucks. And I think that probably he would be one of those people, so I regard him with immediate suspicion, and, like, my back is against the wall, mentally.
Okay.
Now, just to break up the gender politics a little, although it is a subject I like discussing, maybe the reason you don't think Nago is as cool as Matt does, is because you've seen him play with trains.
No, but I haven't at that point.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Okay, I'm just checking.
I'm curious, Todd, what were your first impressions of him? Because I don't think you clearly stated
Like I said, I could see that he was the new cool guy, because I see everything in terms of cliches, and I thought, but I gave him the benefit of the doubt, because I thought, they're not going to try and do Tendo again. This is going to be something a little different. And
I thought he might be Tendo. That's really interesting.
Right. Well, so I kind of saw some goofiness coming for him at the time. I thought, well, obviously, they're going to soften him. They're going to give him a humorous edge. And I like where they went with him. But, I mean, my first impression was, here's another one of these. But I did like his, again, this isn't the kind of thing I usually talk about, but I liked the whole Ixa white, you know, got a cross going on, contrast with Kiva. The symbolism. I didn't understand why he collected buttons.
I like that thing.
That seems like a serial killer.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
That was my first impression of Naga. Psychopath. Simple as that. Actually, that's a question, Matt.
Your question.
We're going to have to pin you down sometime and get you to tell us exactly what your mysterious ancient religion is called. As a believer, do you pick up on Ixa's, like, imagery? What do you think of that? Because, you know, I rag on Kamen Rider Wiki a lot, and when I see people claiming his motif is a Christian knight, and I think, I know what Christian knights looked like, because I live in a country where we have, you know, pictures of them in lots of our big old stone buildings, which I occasionally like to wander around for inspiration. And he doesn't look like one. He's white and he has a gold cross shape.
Well, like, I haven't seen him. I mean, like, I've seen the toy and I've seen, you know, the figure art, and I've seen maybe him in a clip or something, or the suit in a clip.
Oh, you haven't seen him henshin yet, sorry.
I haven't really seen it enough to be able to tell you. Well, I can get a sense from that once I see it, and we can, like, update this if you care to.
But,
I'm not really sure, but I can see, like, I guess maybe the more, like, I don't know, I just wasn't exposed to enough of Nago, and then, like, the show had so many other things going on, I think I was distracted from them, but, my thing about the button thing being a serial killer, like, yeah, that's awful. And to speak of Christian knights, like massacring, like on one of the Crusades, on their way to Jerusalem, the holy city, they were like raping and pillaging because they would be
only
forgiven
one
if they
of
died,
them?
In glorious battle to protect the Holy Land or whatever. Like, I understand that with, I guess, self-righteousness, there is a danger of, there's a great, great need for humility and restraint because, out of the overflow of the heart, the mouth speaks, and as well, your motivations or your actions are made up of your they're your thoughts becoming manifest, you know, and like you can't harbor a superiority and a resentment towards sinners, to use the term broadly, because if you do that, you put yourself in the place of God, and that's how people become evil, tyrannical individuals.
Because I can see the holy thing with Nago, but he is fanatical.
But that's what makes Kiva and Wataru the perfect foil, which seems a little backwards, but having the main rider have the Nago effect would be just be too much, because that's not appropriate for Kamen Rider.
I don't think I'd like that show.
But addressing that that potential by having a secondary guy, a supporting cast guy, have that level of entitlement, I suppose, versus a lead character who is so humble, that's a very clever way of introducing that theme. And I don't think I've ever read anyone do a real thorough comparison of Wataru and whatever his name is from Deno. But I would be interested. I would be interested in reading that or listening to that.
Oh, well,
they start so humble, and where do they go?
They finish exactly the same. Like, that's the amazing thing about it. I really
enjoyed Wataru in his first episode, and I could not watch Ryotaro in his first episode. Yeah. And I don't really know yet what made the difference.
But do you not remember?
But it's very interesting that there really was one for me.
In one episode, it must have been Gaim, when I said, for some reason, I said, well, you know, Ryotaro and Wataru are the only writers that we know have definitely had sex.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So there you go. So the similarities are very strong, but it is funny that you could barely, it had like the wizard effect on you the first episode of Denim.
No, it was worse.
You could barely stand it.
I actively...
Worse than wizard, huh?
Yeah, no, it was, because I just, that character... It's the Martin Freeman thing again.
Yeah, but Deno really pleasantly surprised me with where... I always put Deno over, because it really did surprise me again. I was shocked at how well it did with the ingredients it had.
I just don't understand.
No, I know. I really, truly
don't understand, because the actor has played the same level of self-effacing, shy person in other things, like in
Beck.
Yeah. And there, I could watch it, I could enjoy it, like Wataru. I don't know what the different ingredients are. I don't understand what it was that
it's
made
it quite
him
goofy.
So
Kiva isn't
excruciating.
The interesting thing about Kiva's goofiness is it's much more of a, it's like a serious goofiness, it's a knowing goofiness, and it's got such a dramatic backdrop, whereas Deno really did seem like outright slapstick at the start. Much more fantastical, much more harmless, you know. I don't know about you guys, but I get the feeling, maybe this is too much Lovecraft recently, but there is something looming behind the events in Kiva. You know what I mean? There is something great and ineffable behind the invisible curtain.
And it lives in Helheim Forest, right?
Exactly. Yeah, well, exactly. More so than Gaim. Because in Kiva, every other episode, they're not going, hey, look over there. No, 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 not you, audience. Look at that. Oh, that's awesome. I know, right?
Yeah.
Anyway, next episode. with Kiva, there's just a sense that there is a world. It's a classic monster hunting series. There is a world you don't get to see. There is a world ordinary people don't get to see, occupied by monsters. It takes me back to flipping. I was obsessed with Darkstalkers in the 90s. It was like my favorite fighting game for a good year, because it was based in the idea that these monsters are having fights. Like, I hate fighting games where you're fighting in front of a busy city. I think that's bollocks. I love the idea that these monsters are having fights in, like, little pocket dimensions, and there's people going about their business and they can't see them.
A really interesting thing about Kiva, though, is that it has such a strong sense of place. It doesn't make a big deal out of it at all. It's not like, this is my city and so on and so on, but...
and I won't let you make a cry.
Exactly.
There's a couple of stories that do that.
But I know where I am when I'm watching Kiva. Because you see
in two different time
more
periods.
Than one, you do, but even without that, like, you see more than one eatery. There's Masters Maldemore, but there's also a sort of waterfront, more restaurant-y kind of place that they go to more than once. And you see them they go to town just to go shopping sometimes. And and Washer's home is so suburban, and then you do see them in town. You've got that, like, balancing agent, because if you live in a suburban area, then sometimes you will walk into town, and it just makes it feel like a real life.
There's a whole real-world interaction.
It feels like a normal young person is living somewhere.
Doesn't Megumi have... Am I wrong? Does she have a Slurpee meal in Maldemort? Am I getting a mix up with Mari when I think of her having a Slurpee meal in one of those little, you know, cafe with the curtain?
But she also does that.
The
too.
Workman with the yellow hard hats, you know, yeah, eating
because
theirs
she has a visitor.
Right.
And they go to somewhere else again to
It uses
also,
a lot of different locations.
Often is very sunny.
Is it? Is it a bright?
I think so. Like, that is my recollection. It could just be because I like it. I don't know. But my feeling is that most of it takes place in the daytime when it is sunny, mm-hmm. which you would not expect because, you know, vampires.
Except when Castle Dran has to come out of a skyscraper, then it's conveniently
dark
and nobody notices.
That is sort of within the motif of it. But it's got a real sense of summer holiday feeling.
Oh. When did we watch it?
We watched it in winter.
Oh, okay.
Because it's about finding yourself and becoming an adult and so on. Without saying it, Gaim keeps doing.
Sure.
But it's got a real... it feels like nostalgia. And that might be something to do with existing in two time periods.
Mm.
But while you're watching it, even, to me, it feels like I remember it. And I think the sunniness helps with that. Because... memories often are sunny.
Yeah, when they're happy.
Very interesting. I cannot believe we've been talking about this show for this long. I thought, since we were only talking about six episodes and we were talking about things so broadly, that it would be a quick little thing. But, I think it just shows, like, the depth of this show and, like, how good it really is.
Yeah.
That these first six episodes have us going and going. Do we want to move... to the last couple little points I have to talk about?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay.
We don't want to bore people with us being happy.
Yeah, it's true. People hate happiness. Actually, they just want us to drool over double, right?
Yeah.
Sorry, listeners, I'm not attacking you. It's just a thing.
Let's do a cast where we pretend we love double.
No, I can't do that.
Aww. I can't do that either.
I just do it myself.
So, like, the suit and the power source. Like, the power source is completely mysterious, except for it somehow comes from Kivat, which, like, is he a machine? Is he a living creature? Like, who knows? I really hope that's expanded upon. But, like, once again, it's a mystery that the show is setting up that, like, I think I can almost even go without it ever being explained, but I'm sure we'll get a cool explanation for it, and I'll say, oh, this makes a lot of sense. I don't know, kind of that. And I think it's interesting to have Kivat be, like, an actual character, even though he's this little robot guy who lives with Watru, and, like, it's interesting, because, like, he has, like, a metafictional presence, which, like, I have to say this every time I say the word meta. I don't like things being meta. I'm not into that. It seems like a very stupid, like, hipstery thing. Like, oh yeah, man, that was so meta.
I don't like how people use the word meta on its own, because that is bad English. That's the thing that annoys me. It's got to be meta something, you know?
Right.
Is it metafictional? Is it metaphysical? Is it metaphorical?
It's an old fandom term that just got ahead of itself.
It really did, yeah.
Like, when I was, you know, young and in Harry Potter fandom, there would be... A fandom post is either going to be fan fiction or fan art,
right?
Or meta, and meta post, like, you label it meta, and that means we are going to talk about this. It means we're going to do some critical analysis. That's
right.
What it means. But people, I mean, presumably saw the tag and thought that's what it meant, didn't look it up in the dictionary.
Surely a meta post is a post of a post.
Right, it's a post about a post. Right?
Hey, English graduate, I'm going to do these things, sorry.
But, like, if we're done, not to
put pressure,
but
done.
like, it's cool because Kivat, he, like, talks to the audience, but then he's completely in the show. But he talks to the audience in character. I feel so stupid, especially because I hate helper robots so damn much. The way they were done, like, Kivat is an actual character.
He's the Digimon fan.
Yeah. You know what? Digimon are real. Like, man, I could go on about how superior any of the Digimon, even like the lamest Digimon, is to any of the stupid helper robots in Double or O's.
It's enough for
I
me
think
just
that our podcast just lost all credibility when our host said Digimon are real.
No, it's enough for me.
R.I.P. It's over.
It's enough for me that he started a sentence with man. Let me tell you, okay? You want to bring Digimon in? Okay, we'll go there. You want to go there? We'll go there.
No, like, small tangent. This is a pocket dimension within the podcast, and then I'll just move on from that.
Meta-Digimon.
They are, yeah, in Digimon, they are, like, almost, they're almost like a soulmate. Like, they're an extraction and a digital persona, digital monster personification of the kid with whom they are partnered. They're not random creatures that you capture. Like, all Digimon have a life of their own in the digital world, but these special ones, I'm speaking like from the first season, have an intrinsic connection and are like almost the heart of the child with whom they are paired. And like, that is so strong. It's almost like they're their soulmate in a weird way. I mean, obviously they're not going to be romantically involved and they would move on to other people or whatever, but like, the Digimon is a part of them. And it's like this manifestation of all that is good and noble, and like, almost the weaknesses that the character has, their Digimon has the strengths.
So rather than like,
arrogant.
Because I don't know anything about Digimon at all.
Right.
For example, but I know the voices you do, and that's what I sort of picture when I hear them. So rather than, for example, a character being like, I have the ring of courage. I have the ring of strength. It's more like they have a little character who manifests that quality.
Right, exactly. Right. And okay. Like, that's they cool. they have, you know, at their highest or at their greatest potential, they have within them great courage and strength and whatever else. I mean, strength isn't actually one of them.
Friendship.
But, yeah, friendship. Ah! Like, they have that noble character within them, like as a kind of core motivator within them, but
okay.
Like when they aren't firing on all cylinders as humans, like the shortcomings of those play out. So like, there's a really good example of that with courage. Like Tai Chi, whatever, okay. His courage turns into foolishness, and like, he puts himself in danger one time on purpose because he is brave, but like, he doesn't have the courage to be humble and to ask for help from others at times, and like, he needs to find that. You know what I mean? And then like, his Digimon helps him find that sort of thing.
Okay, so, I mean, so by contrast,
yes.
Kibat, as I call him, I think you called him Kibat, we both come to the same, we know what each other's talking about.
Right.
What's his full, is it like Kibat Bat the second, or third? Okay, thank you.
Yeah, it is funny, the full name.
And you better believe that there are others. Yeah, so Kibat Bat the second is kind
third.
Of... Third! Ah! Alright. Hey, maybe I want to talk about Kibat Bat the second. Spoilers!
No, not till later.
Kibat Bat the third is Washeru's butler, right? That was the impression I got.
Oh,
then.
Yeah.
Because he's got... He looks after him.
Yeah, he hangs out with him in the bath, everything.
He
yeah.
kind of, like... It's not that, like, he gets the door for him, but, like, I don't know, he's kind of a porter. He has his little weird violin that he hangs upside down in.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, Shizuka, who we haven't mentioned at all, is the one who really looks after Washeru, makes sure he doesn't die. But
right.
when it comes to sort of... When I think of the boss of that household, it's Kibat.
Yeah.
And his tone as well, I think he's brilliant voice acting as well with Kibat, I think. And I love some of his expressions. I think one of the things that really cemented the first episode as one that would make me keep watching was during the fight where he catches the horse fangire's sword in his mouth. And goes, Zander?
Yeah, go ahead.
He's like, Zander, just a great bit of voice acting because you can picture the guy during this. And I just thought, right, if they're going to do stuff like this, if they're going to use this character, if he's not just the goof, if he's not just Phoebus,
right.
Oh no, I'm burying Phoebus, then, yeah, brilliant. And that is what happens. I mean, you'll be surprised, really. Okay, my memories are quite vague, but from what I can recall, you will be a little surprised with what they do with him. I'm not saying he goes off on his own and has his own little side story, but... They use him. He gets stuff to do. I'm not about to say he's... Because I haven't seen it. I'm not about to say he is a Digimon. I'm not about to say he's an integral part of Washeru's characterization. But he is a character, I would say.
Yeah, and that's really neat because, like, you don't really have that. Even, like, you know, I love Black. But, like, even with Battle Hopper. Like, Battle Hopper is this noble little motorcycle that helps him out. But, like, Battle Hopper's more of a machine than a person, and, like, he's a machine who cares to some extent, and, like, he protects Kotaro, and I don't know if you guys have seen this, but at one point in the show, Kotaro is holding him, holding Battle Hopper as he lays, as he lay on the floor, like, injured, and, you know, Kotaro is, like, crying over him, basically, and, but, like, it's cool, because he gets better, but, like, still, like, there is, I like the concept of that, and I think, it's really, really done well with Kiba.
There's an episode of Masked Rider.
Oh, no, come on.
Yes, where similarly-ish, the motorcycle believes
that
the main character is cheating on him with another bike. So there's that, similar, kind of, not really, let's move on.
I wasn't jealous. I wasn't jealous, and like a Rideron, whatever it's called in Masked Rider, Cartron. Yeah. Cartron is like a, come on, you're jealous, don't be jealous. Come on, Dex wouldn't do that to you. Yeah, yeah, sure, whatever.
The car's like, I don't mind when he drives other cars. Yeah. Very weird.
Okay, but yeah, you know.
Well, we all have different standards, right?
Helper characters. Again, like Deno, I think it went up a notch. You know, I hate the Imagine as much as the next guy, turning up everywhere, you know, getting the spotlight, but... they're characters. They have annoying catchphrases that they use every episode. Fair enough. But I really like the idea of such a routine part of the show, getting lines and getting motivation and a personality. And
I like that he's educational.
Yeah, exactly. And a backstory. Yeah, I love his...
Mogdignani.
Yeah, not only does he
bring
love...
that in for the kids.
Okay, he has a crush on Megumi. Ha ha ha. But he has a crush on her because of her neck. That's brilliant.
Yeah.
He's a vampire bat. And then they link that in with Modigliani's ridiculous paintings. Great stuff. Yeah,
it's
really funny.
I bet loads of kids know who Mogdignani is because of this show, and for that reason only. Like, they don't have a great, deep understanding, but I bet they can name it.
Yeah.
And I bet they could, like, point out the one of these five pictures.
Oh, crikey, how much... I mean, you know, Turtles didn't have a bit at the end of an episode that I remember that taught us about what Donatello actually did.
No.
But...
would have been nice.
You better believe... that kids, kids growing up, we then knew those names, and then we weren't scared. We didn't think that high concept art was as high concept. We didn't believe in that cultural divide because we were like, oh yeah, of course, that's where they got the name from. And that, you know, when parents took me to Italy, and they were like, we went to see the flipping Michelangelo's, you know, bit of little scribble he did on the ceiling over there. I wasn't like, oh, Michelangelo, that's a weird foreign name. I was like, dude, pizza.
Yeah, you feel like you
own
it.
I got it.
Because it's been given to you.
Yeah, and that'll sound stupid and offend a lot of people, but that is, you know, that is a gateway. There are a lot of viable gateways into stuff that kids otherwise wouldn't discover. And I've forgotten actually about Kiba's little, you know, PSAs.
Mm, it tells you about music and...
Yeah.
I didn't pay as much attention to them as I should have because I think I was really getting through them quite fast,
so
I just wanted to get to the story. And because it's subtitled, I was probably doing something else, so I wasn't looking at the screen while that was talking, because I wanted to get things that I had to do done while I could, so I could watch the show. But if I watched it again, and I probably will, because talking about it now, I'm like, I want to watch that again, especially now it's getting sunny.
Mm.
I will pay attention this time, and I'll learn so much, I expect.
I want to watch it again,
because I don't know very much about music.
Because doing this has reminded me how much I didn't get. I mean, Matt talks about he's mentioned some of the mysteries that maybe he says he doesn't mind if they're never solved.
Mm.
I think, oh yeah, actually, there were some things I still have questions about. Yeah.
That's interesting. Mm. Real fast, just something that kind of hit me, talking about the, you know, king, queen, bishop, and knight.
Rook. For some reason, it's chess, and I assume that, like, the lesser fanguys are technically pawns, but they never say that. There isn't a knight. It's weird.
Well, which is, you know, which is fine. We don't need a horse dude, necessarily.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting that the monster men are hanging out playing chess with each other all the time. Like, even their weapons, when they turn into those weapons, they basically turn into chess pieces and go to Kiba.
It's a very subtle acknowledgement of the chess theme.
Well, it all fits in with the whole gothic, romantic, European
It would be too much, though, wouldn't it, if Wataru was always playing chess over the counter with Master or something.
Yeah.
It would be too obvious and just a bit annoying. that making chess just one of, like, chess is a highbrow thing. People think of it as quite lie and die. And if you play chess, then you must be a total genius.
When you see a character playing chess, it means they're clever.
Yeah.
It's hilarious cliche shortcut. Yeah.
Like with the Modigliani stuff, just throwing it in as something that is just there, it makes it far more accessible to children watching.
And what else are they going to do in there?
Yeah. Well, they move on to other table games later, don't they?
Oh, they do.
Okay. Wow. Yeah. I don't know what else to say. I don't know. The suit's beautiful. It's interesting how, like, he has these kind of piecemeal form changes, which I like.
Yeah, because you know, don't you, when you see, like, what is it, the right arm is the Garuru Saber and the left arm is the Basha Magnum, and you're like, well, when is he going to use both at once?
Other way.
Okay. But you're like, when is he going to use both at once, you know?
Right.
Because you know he's got it.
Well, why not, right?
Yeah.
How many whistles can Kivat hold at one time in his mouth?
Yeah. Isn't that weird, though, the whistle thing? I have to say, like, I like it, but isn't that the strangest form change you've ever seen? I put a whistle in the mouth of the bat that turns me into this guy. He blows on it, and it gives me a power or summons some guy.
That's... How else do you summon things?
Right, yeah. Whistles?
That's what, that's what they did in Sound of Music. So why not?
Oh yeah, work for them.
All right. Well, I think we're kind of edging to the end of the discussion because it's been a really long time and we've said a lot. I guess one thing I have to complain about, and it might just be me being spoiled by watching like from Forze on, is the like finishing attacks.
Okay.
I don't like how it's funny. I don't mind it at all in, you know, in the 70s when we have the weird jump cuts and stuff, but like I wish they would have gone a slightly different direction as far as having like the insert attack preamble stuff for his finishers.
I guess it is a bit, yeah, that's the kind of thing, like I go in the options
menu
and I turn off cutscene whatever, you know, because that is, it's the stock footage,
right?
But I mean, you grew up watching Power Rangers, right? Didn't you love that stuff? Isn't that what Power Rangers is all about?
No, it was boring.
I think one of the faults, like in Digimon, is they always have to show the Digi, like them changing form, the Digivolution. It's like, can we just skip it?
Oh yeah, that's a good point. That's probably one of the things that put Claire and I off Sentai, is the routine of it. You know, you're waiting, they beat the monster, and then it has to grow, and then they have to summon the things, and they all have to combine immediately. You don't even get to see them individual showcase.
We went through Deca Ranger, and it was good. We went through Abaranger, but towards the end of Abaranger, which really started to wear, started to fast forward the big battle.
Too many dinos, too much rigmarole, you know, didn't just stop meaning anything. That's probably one thing we still really like about Rider is the lack of guff, but unfortunately, they're putting more and more of that in. One thing I like about Kiva is that although it does have the obligatory post Kabuto giant CG thing, Castle Duran doesn't factor into the action quite as much. I like how it eats the Fangaya's soul.
Yeah, that's cute.
It's not like Deno's Train where it's like, let's break out the cannons and have a big fight or the big stupid car in Double, you know, which I can't even put in to words how boring that is.
If Castle Duran was always fighting, Kiva would go down like two places.
Yeah, doesn't it? It fights like in the movie, doesn't it? And it's cool because it's exceptional. Or maybe like in later episodes, it's something like, oh wow. You know, it's kicking ass. I don't know.
But it's so obviously a lumbering object.
Yeah.
Don't make that fight. Because it will look bad.
Yeah. But yeah, it's got... Kiva occupies an interesting place there in the middle between Deno and Decade, and I think it really doesn't get enough props for what it did at that time.
I think something that... you know, I like to nitpick shows and improve them as I'm watching them.
Why not?
Like, something I would have liked to see is Watcher actually have to go, like, feed the soul to the castle or, like, throw it or something. Because, like, the coming out, it's just a little too much, you know?
But brush its tongue.
It's funny the first time, don't you think? Like, the very first time, because it's so crazy to see this dragon go,
ooh,
and hear the swallow effect. But yeah, I guess they could have done with it later. Like, I recall it doesn't... I don't know. I don't recall it coming up a lot, so maybe it stops doing it. I don't know.
I hope so. Maybe they can just truncate it. Like, yeah, it happens. Like, we know it happens. It happens every single time. But, like, we don't have to see it every single time.
Yeah.
You know? But, like, I thought it was funny. In one of the first couple times it happens, Kibot made a comment about it. And I don't know, Watcher was like, yeah, I guess so, or, like, they just had a little casual chat about it.
Oh, Kibat's like, chew properly, isn't he, or something, he says to
Yeah,
chew before you swallow. He's such a butler, see, he's such, like, not a parent figure, but, like, a helper.
He reinforces that, so that's pretty cool.
Now, none of us have mentioned the rockin' early 2000s theme song, but I have to say, like, having grown up on more alternative music, it was pretty cool. You know what I mean. Stuff that called itself alternative, whatever. It was pretty cool to have a writer finally go for a more hard rock element. And it works, obviously, with the aesthetic, with the European...
With the bike.
Gothic aesthetic, with the badass bike, with the chains. The chain, imagery that goes throughout the whole thing.
It is a really gorgeous bike. It's a shame that it's not really used, you know... We always say it's not so much a bike show.
Yeah. But I think it's a, you know, it got me in the mood. It's one of those, I think this is quite a common thing with Rider fans. They'll say, oh, this is the intro I don't mind skipping. I don't mind not skipping, rather. And like, yeah, I'll sit through flipping, God, who even is it? Is it, it's Torbjorn, I think. It's, you know, it's just J-Rock.
Sure.
Not really Visual K sort of band, but yeah, it's just, you know. It's inoffensive, and it gets me in the mood for the show. It's not quite as annoying as Deno's theme or, I don't know, Double's theme. It's more like Oz's. It gets me in the mood for the show. It matches the show, I think, for me.
Yeah, I really like it. And, like, it's cool because it gives hints about, like, the whole legacy thing.
Right,
But, like, it isn't explicit about everything. Like, you know, it doesn't talk about, like, going back and forth between timelines.
No.
Like, anything stupid like that. It's just, like, it's enough. To like push you and or just like say, to give you a nudge, like this is what it's, you know, this is what you're gonna see, some of what you're gonna see, enjoy it now, like, and it's gonna be pretty badass.
And just, you know, just the mention of breaking the chain is enough. It's not, you know, whereas Deno, half the song is literally, isn't it good, isn't it good, isn't it great, isn't it good, isn't it good, isn't it great, like, you know, I was on the fringe of the garage scene, and I am not about to listen to a song that sounds like that, right. Although I was loving it like this at the time. Repetitive, annoying.
Yeah, that's like my complaint about Daft Punk. Like, I want to like them, but it's like, well, I'll listen to like 90 seconds of a song, and then like that's enough. Like, you don't have to repeat the song.
If it loops, exactly.
Yeah,
I reckon that's
why Something Between Us is one of their best songs, because it has very little looping, or it does it well, I guess.
I reckon that the intro video. With the song, I think that's one of the best intros in Kamen Rider.
Yeah, I think...
The intro sequence, because it hits the themes, it tells you things. I don't think it changes.
It's directed well. I don't know. It's not one of those where, like, they have the characters covered up until it...
Yeah.
Until they're...
It's a little bit classic gothic. Yeah. It's a little bit...
It's music video.
Yeah, it is. And it goes far enough with the, like, reaching across the decades and stuff. But it doesn't go fully into, like, stupid. It's like a Meat Loaf video. In that it is pretty cheesy.
There's a lot of bombastic.
But it's also totally rad.
Seeing them all, like, around the throne with the rose petals. Yeah, that's what you
and, like,
want, isn't
sitting
it?
Up,
yeah, that's
like
crazy
a,
stuff.
That's what you want from that from the show.
Shirtless Watcher sitting up and the roses coming off. Like,
and
that's awesome.
Chains
reaching
under his skin.
Chains coming and everything. It's like, yeah.
It fits perfectly.
Don't be embarrassed about how overblown and emotional the series is, because, you know, that's legitimate.
Mm.
Right.
Just like Meat Loaf.
And on that note.
Okay. All right, yeah, I guess that's it for now, guys. I should get going.
Okay.
Will you continue watching?
Yeah.
Masked Rider.
The hard question.
Masked Rider Kaiba. Will you keep going?
Kaiba.
Yeah.
I feel bad. This is I'm like a victim of my own obsessions.
I know what he's going to say. He's going to say he can't finish it until he's finished Kuga, Agito, Ryuki, Fize, Blade.
You better not.
I think I'm actually shattering that that desire, but I don't think I can finish it without doing a proper... Like, I don't want to have to... Well, maybe I do want to rewatch this show and go through bit by bit. I don't know. It's a really hard, like, it's hard to stop or hard to not keep going. It's the same thing.
Are you saying you want to maybe do a proper run through of Kiva with, like, the full crew at some point?
Yeah, maybe. Although, I don't know. This is almost more fun. It's like talking about how great it is.
Yeah. Well, we can keep up with you however you want to watch it. If you want to talk about it, we can do that.
Okay. Yeah, maybe Kiva's special enough that it can pierce my heart.
I would like to know, actually, with this black fanboy, what his favorite Heisei series is.
Yeah.
Like, we haven't really gotten into that, because I get the feeling that Matt's not quite as into Heisei as, and I won't say into Showa, he's not quite as into Heisei as he is into Black. Like, there's not yet been one of these newfangled kids shows that has matched up to his, you know, his old school 80s.
It's because he's not watched the good ones.
Heroic. Yeah, yeah, and I'm curious to know.
Yeah, it's hard to say. Like, I really want to see Kubu because I think that's going to be amazing. I mean, I've seen, like, 10 episodes. Actually, I need to watch episode 10 because my file was corrupt and I only got, like, 5 minutes into it.
Oh, yeah.
Which was, like, shattering. But, like, I think that's going to be really cool. But it feels so different from Black. Like, it's hard to compare. But, yeah, like, none of these, nothing has surpassed Black for me.
Okay.
I will be honest. The only thing better than Black is, like, the original show.
Right.
And it's not because it's the original, it's just because it's done so awesome, and Hongo and Ichimonji are such great characters. And, like, I don't know, you got the whole crew, Tachibana, Goro, Taki, the ladies who, I don't remember all the names right now, I think there's a Mari in there, though. But, like...
Mari, Michi, Yuri, Choco, Yako, God, there's hundreds of women in the original series.
Surprisingly, yeah.
But, like... And they're like, they have a great episode when they fight the mushroom guy. Like,
oh yeah,
the ladies are amazing, pulling out all their skills to fight
yeah.
Against Shocker. Like that was awesome. But like, yeah, like for me, it's probably like Black and the original are like they have parody, and then everything else is just like trying to be them. In my estimation,
yeah.
I would like to know what Matt's sort of his Heisei partner series for Black is. You know.
Yeah, watch them all and then tell us.
Yeah,
no, I definitely will.
Because there's something cool, like, I like saying, like, you know, I really like Super One and Forze. Like, because then, you know, there's so much obvious parallels you can draw between those series and obvious team-ups you can dream up. And I want to imagine you saying, like, oh, yeah, Black and Kiva. And, like, to think that, you know, when you're brushing your teeth at night, it might just happen to wander into your head, like, oh, what if Black and Kiva met? What would Kotaro and Washiro, how would they get on, you know?
Oh, that would be interesting.
I'd just like to know what you think.
Like, I kind of already get it. I can almost see connections between them. Like, something is up with Washiro. Like, when when he gets bitten to transform, he gets the Fengire lines. Or,
yes.
You know, like, stuff showing on his face.
I'm they're
like,
mentioned double.
There is...
No,
I'm not. I'm
okay.
Not. I'm just saying, there's something to him that he's not... Either he's not completely human, or Kivad is somehow imparting some bit of Fengirenness to him, and that allows him to transform. And, like, I don't understand what that is, but, like, you know...
I'm definitely going to watch it again. I can't listen to this and remember and be like, yes, and not watch it again. I need to be right there.
Matt, it is explained. Okay? It is. Take solace in that. After double,
actually.
and during Gaim, in the middle of Gaim, when every episode I'm going... So how do these fruits, what actually are they doing when they
henshin? That question that you have there will be given to you an answer.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's great because, like, it in a weird way, like, I mean, I don't know if you guys were saying specifically, like, that Kiva's a little postmodern writer, but, like, it's taking stuff from Black and from the original, and it's doing it in different ways. Like, he's a reluctant hero who's, like, cast into this thing. Like, he has to do it, but, like, for way different reasons. Like, there's no...
Yeah.
I think, Claire, you were comparing the stance on the motorcycle.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, Hongo is this intense guy, and, like, Ichimonji, as goofy as he can be at times, like, they are intensely against Shocker,
they
and
really
they
are.
Hate it, and, like, that is their drive in life.
Yeah.
And, like I said earlier, like, Wataru, he wants to aspire to be like his father, and, like, he happens to have to be a writer because of circumstances, and, like, that's kind of, like, one, it's a really cool contrast, and it makes it way more interesting. It's especially today, you know, in the modern world, it's a way more interesting way to do a hero. But kind of, like, you know, Kotaro tried to live a normal life, like, to me more so than, like, Hongo and Ichimonji, because, like, they seemed like they were just waiting, like, they're always reading the newspaper and stuff, and, like, investigating around town, making sure Shocker's not up to anything, whereas Kotaro was trying to live more of a normal life, and then he would stumble upon, through the power of plot convenience, Golgun plots, and then have to take them down.
It's Golgun plots!
Yeah, because he wanted to destroy them so badly, and, like, you know, the whole getting the Hiko back and all that stuff.
Yeah.
But, like, Kiva maybe, I don't know, it'll be interesting to see if Kiva does reach parity with Black, and, like, if it's the next, like, evolution, like, the next step in, like, taking this simplistic character and enriching it
Todd
and humanizing
them. So excited because he just thought of something that is
so
relevant.
Okay, I'm going to be really careful. No, I promise, this is careful. Okay, because I just said, this is for the listeners more than anything. When I said, I really hope that Kiva, and I was just blowing smoke, like, just a random example, because it happens to be the one he's watching. What if Kiva becomes the one that he says, right, this is my Heisei equivalent of Black, this is my top series, da-da-da. I hope some people out there thought of this before I did.
Had the same, like, sudden mad flailing of the arms, like...
Okay, Matt, yes, it is. I'm sorry. No. There it... Okay. The main final...
No, shush!
I'm sorry!
No, don't say it!
Can I just say...
No, you can't!
Let me just interject. If that is in fact the case, then I'm going to be a very happy person.
I think you will be interested. I'm not going to say you won't be disappointed. I'm not going to say you won't be excited, because I don't know, because it's your opinion. But when I watched Kiva, I was thinking, holy crap.
Nope.
This is...
Something.
Like something that I know. Yeah. Cause, no, it is interesting, because I think when a lot of people who've seen Black, and I think... No, okay, I don't. I think a lot of people saw Black at the time, and I think a lot of people in Spanish-speaking countries, especially because it was massively popular there, I think a lot of people in the Philippines, a lot of people in South America, saw Black, and it played a huge role in their lives, they absolutely loved it. Nowadays, I don't think a lot of modern Tokyo fans, correct me if I'm wrong, have actually watched it.
Yeah, I didn't know what kind of role
it's regarded as a legendary.
Fandom at large.
Yeah, it's regarded as a legendary series, but be honest.
I don't see a lot of stuff about it. I don't look, but the people the Tokyo fans who I follow in various places don't. Spend a lot of time on Black.
Well, they don't talk about Showa series generally. I've not even gotten halfway through Black, but I know enough, and I wonder. Completely lost my train of thought. Someone remind me what I was saying.
You wonder if this same thought will have occurred to more people.
I wonder if when people think of Black, because when people think of a series, they can generally come up with some defining traits.
Yeah.
And Black does have some defining traits. I wonder if modern fans know it. I wonder if people who've watched Kiva, modern fans who prefer watching the more recent stuff because it's got slightly more complex plotting and it's, you know, it's got more impressive special effects. But yeah, that's unfair. I didn't mean to bash, like, people who prefer Heisei, but you know what I mean. There are obvious reasons why Heisei is better than Showa, let's be honest. And, although I do love 70s practical effects... I wonder if, when they see some of the things in Kiva, if they think it's completely original. Or if they think, if it evokes something deeper in them. I don't know, I think now that I've realised that, these two series are really good companion pieces. I think I remember people mentioning it. I think when, shortly after Kiva wrapped, you know, IRL, I remember some fans talking about how similar this element was. So I guess it is out there. I guess people know about it, but I wonder how many people had the full impact, you know, and really, really watched all of Black, got through themselves into it. Because I know Matt has, so I'm really looking forward to his opinion, because I don't know anyone else that's finished Black.
Maybe people just... I don't know, maybe they just don't say it.
Yeah, oh, I think that's...
Say it, please.
I don't understand how you can have finished... I believe Cannibal Sarasanian has finished Black because of their email address, which I won't share on the air. And if you're worried about how I know that, when you comment on Sentai Rangers, I can see your email address.
You should share, because they're a cool person, and you should email and tell them they're cool.
No, that's just a bit weird, they're sharing someone's email address.
Yeah.
You can find them on Tumblr.
It is kind of strange, but...
No, it's just
anyway,
good to big up our friends.
Yeah.
Even if we do talk about how some of them look like they'd mess you up, thanks for that.
I meant it as a compliment.
Yes, I have hard friends. So watch it. Don't disagree with me. No, please do, because I'd much rather have an argument about how Kiva and Black are similar. But don't tell Matt.
Yeah,
right?
don't spoil it.
No,
for
don't.
That's too important.
Just talk to me. Matt will give you my Twitter name at the end. Don't worry. can talk about.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, cool. Well, I don't know what else to say, and I should get going. But this has been really great, and I'm even more excited. I'm watching the show. That's it. I'm sold. Yeah. I'm done. This is
me
it.
Too.
He was my next writer.
Happiness.
And I may just make my notes now.
Cool.
I don't know. We'll see about that. But I may be shattering the paradigm. The tradition, the two show tradition that I've established that can't be changed.
Yeah.
Isn't it nice to verbally enjoy things?
Mm.
Oh yeah, I love it.
This has been much more fun. Well, than
I
usual.
This is the weird thing about the internet. People on the internet who complete strangers who listen to me get pissed off at the writing in Gaim or whatnot. They don't know that, like, for the rest of my life, I am enjoying things. Well, any of us, not just me. You know, they don't know that we're, like, seeking out things we like and then enjoying the things we like.
Yeah.
So it is weird to just give people this one side of our personalities.
Yeah, we felt like...
I think we owe it to ourselves
and them. We
felt like
we were becoming negative agents in people's lives and just bringing down thunder.
We should be going out there and saying,
it's not really why we want to do podcasts.
But we should just be saying... We're not
share nice things.
We're not just trying to say this kicks ass in a boring way. We're trying to give you real reasons. Take this stuff seriously, you know? And maybe build up some real discourse about what makes a genuinely good show, not just it is cool. You know, let's talk about what's right and wrong. We've criticized some stuff in this podcast, even though we set out to be positive.
Mm.
And I think I think constructive criticism is an overused term. I think hate is an overused term. Let's just talk about what we like and didn't like. Try to not end up ripping each other's faces off. And look to the future.
Yeah.
In graduate.
It would be great to hear from people who have similar or different opinions. Again, try not to spoil Matt, but... Like if, I mean, I know a lot of people really, really like Kiba.
Mm.
Sometimes even the people who like to, you know, say things about Kiba. So, you know, get in touch. Because we want to hear about nice things and talk about nice things more. And
it would be really cool to get some voices who have real
positive.
Real thoughts.
Positive.
Not even just positive, I'm talking about genuine now.
Yeah,
whether
well,
you've
that
got
too.
Criticism, whether you've got love, if it's a genuine thought, if it's a complex thought, then we want, you know, Matt, am I overstepping my boundaries? I would like to have someone like that on a show to talk about this stuff. I would like more voices.
Yeah, like, I don't know if she listens, but when I asked, Anne Ominous about coming on, and she was like, maybe not, but she did say we should talk to Tumblr named Crown of Birds, who I know is a big Kiba fan, because she did a Lady Kiba, like, dress cosplay thing, which... It was very well done. I know she likes the series, so like if you are listening and you want to come chat, come and chat.
There is a hesitation to put your opinions out there, I think. If it's weird. Sometimes the people with the least worthy opinions are the most courageous about expressing them. And then people who have brilliant things to say maybe feel that either their opinion won't be valued or just that, you know, what's the point? Because everyone knows Kiva's a great show.
Well,
why do I have
just
to say
wonder
it?
If the people, well... The couple of people who usually tell us we're overthinking are going to say we're overthinking when we like stuff.
come on.
Yeah, that would be interesting. That's an interesting experiment.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't wait for the results because I need results from my tests and my experiments that I'm doing.
Empiricus.
In order to do something.
If you experience any complications, would like to make a testimonial, or have any questions, send your correspondence to uncommoncastrx@gmail.com or contact the Uncommon Crew via Twitter @ComusQ, @IllisPlay, @ComRaderPez. Keep an eye on @UncommonRx, where one can receive updates, deliver input, and give feedback. Also, visit uncommonrx.tumblr.com for additional content.